the fat, fat, fat. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 5-9 The Fan. I'm JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. Game 4 tonight. Lightning battled back. We've had, I would say that it hasn't been the greatest series so far. It's been compelling because of the ups and downs. It's had its moments, but I think tonight what we end up getting is a more closely contested game, and one that is a little tight at the end of it. Not tight in the sense of, oh, wow, Colorado could come back and they could score a ton of goals. They could make something happen in the middle of nowhere. But now, our buddy, our friend and yours, two-time Stanley Cup champion and inventor of the Clever app, which is like taking off. You're like, it's Christopher Stieg. You're at like symposiums now. Like you're doing TED Talks for this. Like, are you actually becoming more famous for this app than you were like as a hockey player? Like, what's happening here? Who's letting you onto the stage? You're not talking, are you? You just stand there. You're the eye candy.
They allowed me onto the stage. It was shocking. I was scared. Somehow it turned out all right. I think it's because you prepped me for these moments, JD.
That's good, man. No, I just picture you more like the Vanna White, where all you do is like the speaker is speaking, and then you do like the hand movements up to the PowerPoint, you know, where you're like, you got like the frame, you know, the frame box with the two hands, the point, the like head nods. Like those are all, like, those are your cues. You're there to like back
exactly
it up.
It. Yeah, that's exactly it. If I speak too much, generally, who knows what's going to happen. Yeah. So my brothers and everyone there, they're like, just keep it simple. Yeah. Let us do the talking.
Yeah, you're there. Show them the shiny rings you have. make them sparkle. Make them shine when we're up there. But yeah, again, if you have youth in sports, whatever, it's just like if you're involved in any type of sport, I implore you to like go again, check this out. I think that it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, but I think that it is really going to become something that is just a staple for coaches, parents, whatever. So you are a special teams guy. Like, you love talking about special teams. You always have strong opinions about power plays. And so far this series, like, the discrepancy has been pretty massive. Like, Colorado just, every time, essentially, that they get one here, they're scoring on them. And I wonder if you think that there's actually anything that Tampa can even do moving forward. Because I believe in the momentum of Tampa going into tonight. I think that they have the pedigree. Like, there's a lot of reasons to believe in Tampa Bay. We're kind of idiots for getting so ahead of ourselves, believing that, like, Colorado had wrapped that up after 7-0. But I just don't know what you say to a group, even like the Lightning, when it just has to almost be terrifying to take a penalty against these guys and knowing like you're at their mercy.
Well, where it starts is in their zone entries, right? There's only a couple teams on earth that can go to a one-man drop, and it's Colorado and it's Edmonton. You can give it to one guy and he can back off four penalty killers with speed. So what you have is you have MacKinnon coming up at with such high rates of speed. He kicks it off, Landeskog or whoever, Rantanen down the wall, they kick it back, and that gives Makar all day and night to make plays. And then you have guys that are so creative. You have guys that can make such high danger plays on both units, and it just, like, for what do you do is you try to, again, this is what I would probably do. I'd go back into a diamond, sit back, and then try to pressure them off entries as much as you can, and then sit back with a guy in the middle of the ice. Almost like the windshield wiper penalty kill, because that's all you can really do is try to take lanes away when you can. You almost have to submit that they're going to get in off the entry, but right when they stop up and get it in the hands of Landeskog, that's when you pressure, because you clearly cannot pressure MacKinnon. If you take him on off the entries, he can also take you on as well. So you're going to have to pressure the other guys, high rates of pressure. And again, they move it around so well, they'll open you up at times, but that pretty much seems like the best way for them to do it. Or if you're going to concede that they're not, or you're not going to be a high pressure penalty kill, you got to go back and block shots as hard as you can. You got to have four guys on the ice willing to take pucks in the back and the, and you know, the side of the legs. So it really depends on the philosophy. Tampa Bay is a team that can do both. They can penalty kill with high pressure and they can also sit back and they have guys willing to block shots. But that would be just the thing I'd be looking at. But yeah, when they come at you with such speed and they have the kickback and then they get it to Makar, and Makar's the most dynamic or blue line player maybe we've ever seen, and people are talking since Bobby Orr. Again, Victor Hedman's still my guy, but Kyle Makar offensively, he is so dynamic and so dangerous, and we have that much time and he's just so brilliant up there, it makes it so hard to defend. So there's a lot of things and a lot of problems to solve for the Tampa Bay Lightning, but that would be one way I'd be looking at killing against them.
Yeah, I just, again, it's just, I keep looking at this, and I know Tampa gets their win, and I'm trying to look ahead to game four and think, all right, well, I always think of, like, sports is like, who's getting things easier than the other team? Like, who's able to impose their style, their will? Like, who's playing the game that they want to play? And I just, like, that the reason I started with special teams is, like, I keep coming back to that, going, that's what feels most sustainable. And with Tampa, like, it hasn't been as consistent. They finally get one. They're able to get on the board. This kind of brings me to my next question, which is about a guy that you and I have spent a lot of time talking about, because when he's on, he's brilliant. Like, he's unbelievable. Ailish mentioned the stat yesterday of how, like, yeah, he's now in, like, this rarefied air, Nikita Kucherov, where it's like, yeah, he's only the fourth player in NHL history to have more than 25 points in three consecutive postseasons. And, like, Gretzky, Mike Bossy, and Brian Trottier are the only other ones. And so it's like, holy crap. But it feels so much to me like a casual that when you're watching this stuff, that it's like, okay, what Kucherov are you getting tonight? Okay, you have the Kucherov? Cool, you're going to have a chance to win this game against anybody. Oh, you have Kucherov who's on the power play, who's like trying to force something, or who's just like not engaged in the physical play? Well, then you're probably dead. Like, I don't mean to oversimplify this, but just like, how much of this is going to be about having like a healthy, engaged Kucherov the rest of the way here?
Every Stanley Cup Tampa Bay's won is because Kucherov came back. He was engaged. And we look back at the Toronto series. I don't even think he tried the entire series. Like, he was not engaged at all. He had some big moments. He had some big goals. But even Kucherov, that game, that overtime game winner he scored, or was it the game tying goal? I can't remember, against the Leafs. He didn't even celebrate. Normally, he's screaming and jumping through the roof. So as the playoffs got on, he started to get more engaged. You could see the goals got bigger. The games got bigger. He gets more engaged. The first two games of the series, he had that one, you know, he had that one shining moment in game one. But besides that, he hasn't been himself. And in game two, what changes for Nikita Kucherov? He goes back to his black tape. It's that simple, JD. It's that simple. He goes back to the black tape. He has two assists. He's feeling it. He's not thinking again. And that's where I find Nikita Kucherov falters maybe a little bit for being one of the greatest players of all time. Now, listen, we used to talk about Alexei Kovalev pretty much in the same light, right? Yeah. He's better than Alexei Kovalev, no doubt about it. But when you think about a superstar player who has to change the color of their tape to get going, you know what I mean? That just tells me there's something there. He's always maybe overthinking certain situations and little things where he shouldn't. Just put your black tape on, go out there and dominate like you always do. Stay engaged as much as you can. I know you can't do that throughout the season and all playoffs, or your body won't. I mean, he's only 5'10", 175 pounds, right? It's not like his body can hold up if he wants to play the way he needs to day in and day out. But for me, it's just there's that little mental hitch in him. And we all have it. I had it too. I couldn't show up every night. And obviously, he's a lot greater than I ever have been. So for me, it's just something as simple as the color of his tape. He changes his tape. He goes back to not thinking about anything, and he dominates. He's making great plays out there. He's almost making plays again. He makes them like Patrick Kane, high-pressure, high-tense situations where he's making plays he makes on a Tuesday in Dallas, you know, mid-season. And these are the plays that he's executing on the Stanley Cup Finals on the biggest stage in the world with relative ease. So that's how, again, it sounds insane. You talk about the color of someone's tape, but if he goes to white tape, black tape, you know, back to his white tape, changing this and that, if he doesn't score, if he doesn't get a point, he does this and that. I understand it's kind of worked and it's got him to here. But that, for me, is a cue. That's something that I look at in a player, you know, in their makeup. And obviously, he's one of the greatest of all time. But it's almost like, dude, just stick with your black tape, you know? stop overthinking that situation. Go play your game. You're the best player. You're the best player on the ice.
I honestly used to do that, but as a fourth liner, didn't really make much of a difference for me.
Yeah, but that's what fourth liners are doing. Yeah. They're just grasping at straws.
Big time.
You know what I mean? It's like, I haven't got a goal in so long. I got to change up my tape color.
A guy
like Nikita, he's getting a chance to score every night. He's getting chances to set up every night. You need luck. Mm-hmm. Great players need a little bit of luck. But at the end of the day, if that's what a superstar player who gets 120 points, a point per game, has got, you know, Mike Bossy and all these guys tied to them for the record, he doesn't need that. But those guys in the fourth, third line, I never did it, but you look at guys, they're always changing tape color, just praying to God, like, oh my gosh, just hit me. And then all of a sudden they get the white tape and they get hot for 2 days and then they're back to the black tape. I mean, that's no way to operate for me.
Oh, that's funny. I've been there. I used to do like the bun or the ponytail until something worked. But so on one side, the Tampa Bay Stars came out game three. But a conversation that's been kind of circulating online and a lot of people are inquisitive about is the fact that MacKinnon, yet to score a goal so far in this final round, he's obviously an impact off the score sheet. But is that something that you need for confidence level that Colorado can pull this out, is for him to start producing, putting the puck in the net?
So again, we talked about at the start of the show about where, you know, he's got a lot of third assists. Mm-hmm. He's got a lot of plays that they don't go in like zone entries. Like, you just don't get a zone that easy in the NHL. I don't care who you are. He gets the zone, gets the plays. He gets a third assist on a lot of these goals. Landeskog goal, both Landeskog goals, right? So these are things that he does extremely well. But if you're going to win a Stanley Cup, if you're going to hoist it at the end of the day, if you're going to beat Tampa Bay, he needs to score. He needs to score at least one or two big goals in big situations when he's relied on. Now, I know they key on top players. Patrick Kane was similar. Jonathan Toews, they struggled in the first four games in the Stanley Cup Finals in 2010. I think Toews had an assist or something like that, and we were really heavy reliant on the third and Patrick Sharp's line, right? And then all of a sudden, game five came, Patrick Kane had a goal. Game six, Patrick Kane scores the game-winning goal, right? Stanley Cup-winning goal. If it wasn't for him, who knows? We go back to game seven, maybe we lose, right? These are moments made for superstars. It's like the stars start to align, and it's up to them to grab it, take it, and make the moment count. So if they're going to win a Stanley Cup in game six, in game five, who knows? In game seven, it's going to be on Nathan MacKinnon showing up and scoring the big goal.
Yeah, it's tough because they've just had so many guys that have been rolling in this series, right? Like,
why?
And it's funny because I keep doing this thing with people, and I think it's mostly because we don't watch as much West Coast hockey, right? Like, the Avalanche don't get, like, they come on at a different time, and they, like, the hockey is just a little bit more like this. You're watching your team in your region, and then you want to watch McDavid when you're watching West Coast games, honestly. Like, I think that's a lot of the experience for Canadians out on the East Coast. Like, you pick your West Coast game, you're usually picking McDavid. Like, and yeah, you catch the odd Colorado game, of course, and, like, it becomes more high event viewing when either they play your team or they play someone that's, like, a really interesting matchup. But I keep coming back to this thing where it's, like, everyone talks about, like, who's underrated and who are the X factors in this series, right? Because we focus so much on the goaltending discrepancy. We focus so much on Stamkos and his run throughout this. We talk a lot about Kucherov. We talk a lot about Hedman. We talk a lot about Makar. We talk a lot about MacKinnon. And I have an answer for this, but I wonder who you think is the most underrated or, like, underappreciated, like, the biggest guy moving forward in this series that we probably don't spend enough time talking about.
Well, it seems like he's getting a lot of airtime now, and it's Nichushkin, right?
Yeah.
He's kind of like that big guy. I'll relate it back to my Stanley Cups. 2010, you had Dustin Byfuglien. He's a big body. The playoffs come around. He didn't really have a great regular season, and he showed up, right? He's the guy who can, like, impose his will physically. He can skate at a high level. He can think. You think of 2013, Brian Bickle. You think of these guys that were big guys. They can't really play that way all season, and then all of a sudden the playoffs come. They light it up, right? And you can even look at the other side at Nick Paul. Who was Nick Paul really before this? Ottawa fans knew, right? Toronto fans now found out. These are these big guys that they can impose their will, and they can play at that level they need to all playoffs. Because, again, if they play like this all season, their bodies don't hold up, and they don't even make it to the playoffs. So Nichushkin, I can't even say his name, Nichushkin. however you pronounce it, he's been incredible. He's playing penalty kill. He's on the top line. He's doing everything he needs to do to win a game. Think about all the injuries the Avs have as well, right? You have all these guys that are out, these top players, these high-end players, and he steps up. He's getting goals and making big plays. And for me, again, you talk about guys I don't even know. I'm not saying he's an X factor, but O'Connor, I don't even know who this guy was. I swear, I didn't even know who he was. And then all of a sudden, like, wow, this guy can buzz. He can shoot. Abe Kubel. You know, they have all these dynamic players in their bottom six that can step up at big times. They're not X factors like an Nichushkin, but these are players that can have that, you know, they can score that big goal or they can make that big play at a big time. In Tampa Bay, you know, they have that on their flip side. Hagel hasn't done enough yet. I know him pretty well. He's a buddy, but I need him to do a little bit more. He's not quite in that X factor category for me, like a Paul. And you can even look at that Colton as an X factor as well. He's starting to be a guy that can step up, make big plays. He obviously scored the Stanley Cup winning goal last year. But those two guys as well, right, they can penalty kill. They can play on the power play. They're hard to play against. And they're going to get you big goals at big times. So those two on the flip side would be the guys for me.
Yeah, what do you think it is with Hagel? Why it hasn't, like, he's had some moments with them, but yeah, it, like, you know him. I am kind of curious what you think is, like, the issue of why, like, just he just for whatever reason, it just doesn't seem seamless with him with this team, and it always looks to me like he's a guy who's, like, pressing. It's a lot of little mistakes at times, like whether or not it's just an overthink thing. But, like, yeah, what's your read on why it has been? Like, is it expectations? Why it hasn't been so smooth for him?
I think I can personally attach my circumstance to exactly what he's going through. First off, he got traded for a first rounder. I got traded for a first rounder to Philly at the trade deadline. Very similar. You go into a hockey market in Philly. We just played them in the Stanley Cup Finals before. I don't know any of the players. I don't know many things about them, really, besides playing against them in the Cup Finals. And he goes to, again, the Stanley Cup champions, a team where it's high pressure. You know, every little mistake is magnified. You go from playing in Chicago, where it's like, oh, you know, we're in last place, who knows? Now you hop in, you get traded for a first rounder, you have that kind of on your back. You have all this pressure. You have all these people talking about you. And these things start to mount up. And a player like myself, much like Brandon Hagel, where we thrive is the little plays. A lot of little plays that add up to big plays. And when you're not comfortable in your game, you can't make a little chip pass. You can't make a little bump pass comfortably that will lead up to a guy getting out of the zone or things like that. And then what happens, it kind of goes in the reverse way. You're not comfortable because you don't want to let your team down, right? You're on a top team now. You don't want to let them down. You got traded for this first rounder. And psychologically, it's hard to get past that point, right? And so you got to find a way to do it. And some guys can, some guys can't. I know I had a tough time in Philadelphia with that. And again, those little plays just didn't add up to as many big plays as you would have liked. So again, all it takes right now is Brandon, get in the Stanley Cup Finals, keep playing your game. If one big play goes for you, start to build off that confidence. And he's a great player, but much like him, he's a player that plays hard. He's smart, but he needs a lot of little plays to add up to big ones. And when you're not comfortable, that can be obviously the case.
So about a week ago, we set this series up with Brad Richards, and like we were talking to him about, we were talking about both runs. I forgot to talk to him about you, which is stupid of me now that I think about it. Yeah, I know. It is a flub. Like, I just forgot. And he was just a great guy to talk to before the series because obviously he won his cup with Tampa and then he won it with you guys in 2015 and beat that Lightning team. But I haven't had a chance to kind of ask you this, but like when you're watching these guys now, this Tampa Bay team, like, yeah, they're obviously really different, but it's crazy with Tampa just like how much continuity they've had. Like, Palat was on the team that you played in 2015. Like, you know, Kucherov was there, Hedman was there. Like, they just, there's all these guys that have been there for so long and had this continuity. And I am kind of, just curious, like, what you view them as, like, where that growth is for them. Because, like, they were talented. They made a cup final. But we keep talking about, like, experience and championship pedigree. And, like, you guys had it on that Chicago team. They didn't have it here. I wonder how you think that's going to kind of, like, play out for them over the next few games.
Yeah, what they have is obviously very, it's something special. You can see them be in overtimes, it almost looks like there's no panic, right? And if they would have played us in the, you know, in 2015, there's a different sense of urgency and different sense of maybe panic to their game, where we had that, you know, that calmness and guys that have been there in situations. I know every goal, game was a one-goal game, but we were comfortable in those games playing that one-goal game. And then obviously Tampa had a couple of rough years after that, but they play comfortably now in a one-goal game. They play comfortably with a 2-1 lead, a 1-0 lead. They can hold on. They can defend. And what happens, too, is they have a culture set. There's a culture that's been set by their top guys, and it bleeds through the rest of the team. And what they do is what I've questioned what Toronto does from day one is they have guys that come in, and generally they know what time of games they need to make right plays at right times. And in Chicago, we were 9.9 out of 10 making the right play at the right time, right? You would never see us turn a puck over last 2 minutes of a game. You would never see us force a play a last minute with a lead, 1-0 lead. Guys were trained to make a right play at a right time, and the top players still had the freedom to go out like the Kucherovs, the Canes, to make top plays, high-end impact plays at high times. So what they've done is they built a culture there. It's been set. It bleeds through the entire organization into the team. Another guy comes in, Ross Colton, boom. He steps in. If you don't want to play the way we want you to play, you're out, right? Boom. Nick Paul, if you don't want to come in and play the way we want you to play, you're out. And what I bet they have, I bet they fight in that room like crazy all the time, because we did in Chicago. Not fight where the sense is fist fighting, but Patrick Kane, these guys would come down and say, Chris, you're brutal today. Wake up, right? There was no like, oh, he said I was brutal today. Don't say that to me. You know what I mean? That was the difference between the championship teams I played on and the not. It was how we kept each other accountable. And if you're able to handle the pressure, right, in those high tense situations and get called out by your teammates, man, we called each other out more than anyone. And I watched that Tampa Bay team at times. You watched even New York. Chris Kreider is breaking iPads on bench of his buddies, right? Some teams that could just completely shatter some guys, right? But on these top teams, there's a sense of hardness. There's a sense of, okay, if you're going to call me brutal, I'm going to get back, right? And again, you're going to go out after the game and talk about it. Hey, man, you know, that situation, I wasn't good. What do I need to do better? But there's, you just, you hold each other to a certain sense of accountability. And obviously there's that sense of accountability in Tampa Bay. And, you know, they come back, they get beat bad. Obviously their worst beat of the season. They come back and they win a hockey game, right? They dominate a hockey game. They're 2-1. They're not out of this. So they have that accountability. They have that team that can fight back in the series. Do they have all the healthy enough pieces to beat Avalanche? I don't know. I ended up picking Avalanche to win, you know, 3 months ago. But do I think they can do it? Yeah, they can do it. They're the Tampa Bay Lightning. Of course they can.
Man, I just, throughout this Cup Finals, and I've had to spend so much time, obviously, thinking about the Leafs, because it's been omnipresent with this whole conversation of, like, well, they were right there with Tampa, so, like, how do you differentiate the two, and, like, what's the difference? And, yeah, I keep coming back to those same things about, like, how much culture matters. And I'm not in the Leafs room, and I know that, as like, a couple of years ago especially, they thought they had a great one. And I'm sure that some of those guys are developing as leaders or whatever, but it's just like, you look at Tampa and how many guys came up together, and yeah, just like the accountability within the group, the way that they carry themselves, the way that they're built. Like, Toronto has three guys that were their draft picks, you know, and they're the guys who all ended up getting paid and wanting the money and didn't sacrifice. And the only other guy that's a forward there is Engvall. Nobody else is like draft picks. Nobody else has come together. It's like always like kind of this disposable. It's not like, hey, do you want to play our way or you're out of town? It's like, hey, will you take no money or you're out of town?
It's a different strategy, right?
Exactly, man. And I keep looking at Tampa and thinking that same thing. And now I'm looking at this Colorado team too, the same way, where like all these guys are up for new deals and McKinnon's already out there saying he'll take less to keep it together, and how that's going to have the ripple effect for the guys like Nikushkin this offseason. And yeah, all the other guys that they have to resign, it's just crazy. Also, you guys were just so stacked in. It's just like,
they're stacked. But like, whatever happened to endorsements, you know, to keep salary down as well here in Toronto, right?
Doesn't matter. No, nothing.
Come on, Scotiabank. Come on.
Well, yeah, it used to be. Well, I see these guys on my TV all the time, and like, there obviously is ad money to be made, and yet for whatever reason, it's like, we always talk about how no taxes impact certain places, and we never talk about the plus sides with Canada. It's always just like, oh, the taxes here versus there, anyway, it drives me nuts. But last thing before you go, again, like, I'm looking back, and I'm just like spending time looking back at, you know, your guys' 2015 team, and yeah, like, again, stacked team, deserved to win that year, regardless of the one goal games or whatever. But your buddy Patrick Kane, like, now there's buzz with that that Chicago team of like everybody's on the table. And they're saying that it's not Kane and it's not Taves. I don't know. Do you get the sense, like, where are you at with like 1 to 10 you think Patrick Kane gets traded this offseason somewhere else?
Yeah, I don't know if it – again, I haven't talked to him about this. Whenever I do talk to him, we never talk about hockey. It's just about family. But I truly believe he's – whether it's this offseason or trade deadline, I think he's going to New York, to the Rangers. I just have a feeling that, you know, that people call me crazy. Offer up Lafreniere, offer up a contract, offer up Kako, get him in there, right? And they bring him in. They were missing one elite piece up front. They have a pretty solid back end. They could always add to the depth of it. They have a great goaltender. They bring in one more elite piece up front. And again, I don't know if Lafreniere and Kako will ever be what Patrick Kane was, right?
Or I can tell you that they won't.
That's what I'm saying. So you have two pretty key chips and two pretty key pieces that you can trade, right? I'm not saying maybe you look at doing both of them. I don't know. I watched them play in the playoffs. They're good, but they're not, to me, it's not like, you know, I can't lose these guys for a guy like Patrick Kane, especially if Patrick's like, I'll give you two more years on top of this, right? Mm-hmm. So he'd give me 3 years, 3 years to win a cup. So that's what I would look at doing. I mean, I don't know, again, the cap implications, maybe Chicago can retain some of the salary. He's already played with the bread man. There's a lot of good feeling about him going to New York. And what I love about Patrick is he wants to be on the biggest stage, always playing in the spotlight in front of everyone. Toronto obviously would be the next place where I would be interested to see if he could come. But cap space makes no sense at all. And trade pieces make zero sense to me. So New York Rangers to me is, if he's going to go anywhere, I believe he'd go to the New York Rangers. Again, this is completely me speculating, but me just putting all the stack pieces together.
Yeah, listen, I want to see Patrick Kane on a relevant hockey team while he's still a relevant hockey player. And so I think that makes a lot of sense, especially when you talk about a guy who can be on the big stage back in New York. There's just a lot of cool symmetry there. I think that could work. Christopher Stieg, again, a guy who won a couple of cups. And make sure, again, you check out the Clever app. Thanks for making time, buddy. We always appreciate it.
For sure. Take care.
So that is something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Patrick Kane. So they're going to have this fire sale in Chicago, right? And I know that the reports have been, but it doesn't necessarily include these guys. There's no way that the Chicago Blackhawks can afford to run this thing out with Patrick Kane. Everybody knows, again, he's a Buffalo native. He's a New York guy. This just, to me, makes too much sense. There's something to chew on is how much longer does Patrick Kane remain with the Chicago Blackhawks? He's a pending free agent. His salary is low. Like, a pending free agent, not this year, as in next summer. This is the final year of his 8-year deal with the Chicago Blackhawks. There's no way that he re-signs there just on a legacy deal. His legacy in Chicago is already ironclad. He's the greatest American-born hockey player of all time. And he is, one of the most entertaining guys that has ever played this game. I think it's a little actually unfortunate because he's been irrelevant now for quite some time, but still very, very effective. Irrelevant because of the team that he's been on. Unfortunately, Taves has dealt what he's dealt with health-wise. They had their defense core that was tied up to massive contracts age out very quickly. Corey Crawford, same thing. They've tried to do this readjustment. They tried to do that last year. It didn't work out. I think that Chicago is going to become, a cap haven, and that they're going to try to move off of this guy. But yeah, he's making a big chunk of the cap next year still. His cap hit's 10-5. That's not going to be easy for the Rangers to absorb, but yeah, I think that just the question is, what does it actually take to get Patrick Kane? And how much do you think that Chicago just kind of owes him, to a degree, the opportunity to go play somewhere that like he would rather go?
I think the second that there was conversations about trading Alex DeBrincat, it was over. You're going to get rid of the guy that is the young stud. We had Frank Cervelli on our show maybe a week ago, how he's the number one guy right now that people are circling to be moved. If you're getting rid of the DeBrincat from your team, you're selling away all pieces. Like you're no longer even close to a win now. You have basically told your fan base that we're not close. We're going to get rid of some people and we're going to start the process again. People that are Chicago fans are very upset about this becoming the way that their offseason is going to go. There's no way you Yeah, you should be. Certainly you should be.
I don't think you should be. I just think like it's okay. You've got 1 year left of Taves and Kane, and there's no reason to be sentimental here because guess what? Both guys don't want to be there anyway. They want to move on. They want to be places where they can win hockey games. And I think that, yeah, there is something to playing your entire career with a team, but you look at guys like Sidney Crosby, for example. His teams have remained competitive, so yeah, he might want to stay there. I don't think that the Malkin thing is ironclad, but I think it's pretty interesting that we could end up seeing an offseason where a lot of the stars of the 2010s are in different sweaters. Patrick Kane to a different place. Jonathan Taves to a different place. Evgeny Malkin to a different place. Some people think Nick Backstrom might not be able to return from his injury. So, like, he's not a different place. He might just be out of the league. It's just the league looks like it's about to turn a bit of a chapter with some of the faces in places. And I just think Kane is the most relevant of that group, even more so than Geno Malkin, where I'm more curious to see.
You asked me, if it's going to happen or, like, what it's going to take to happen. I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen, too.
As soon as the DeBrincat thing came up, I thought, for sure, it's going to happen. And the reason I feel like Chicago Blackhawks fans are unhappy is because it's just, like, the end of an era. And wouldn't you want that guy to play on your team forever?
I just think they've known that that era's done for a while now. And, yeah, I don't know about the DeBrincat thing because, you know, he's 24 and you would think that that consists being a part of a rebuild. Yeah, those rumors are fairly fresh. We'll see what actually materializes with that. But, yeah, you're right. There's a part of this where you wonder, well, what is exactly the rebuild if you're moving off of 24-year-olds? I think it's more just, like, that their timeline is not one where they think even that in the next couple of years that they'll be able to compete.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, do the Blackhawks owe anything to Patrick Kane after paying him what I think was $84 million on his last contract? Some people would probably say no, but, yeah, it's a pivot point for this franchise. And, yeah, I think they're going to look very different next year. And I would really, really like to see, as much as it would pain me from a, you know, the Leafs having a chance standpoint, because the Rangers made it further, and we already had conversations as to who you'd rather be. But I think, yeah, Patrick Kane finishing his career with the Rangers, that would be something else. Especially with that team, the reasons for it that Chris outlined. And again, he said he hasn't talked to him, but he knows the guy. Mm-hmm. And let's just say that that's probably a more educated guess than you and your buddies at home. Let's take a break. I had an opportunity to speak to Our Lady Peace bassist, Duncan Coutts, yesterday. It was really fun. We had a great conversation. The band's been touring for 30 years, playing for 30 years together. It's pretty outrageous. I actually think in a weird way that we underappreciate Our Lady Peace to a certain degree. Anyway, they have a show this Friday at Massey Hall. They're on a tour right now all throughout Canada. They've got like tons of really cool shows. I would recommend going to the website if you are a fan of OLP. I just did the thing where I kind of looked back and went through a bunch of the tracks and I went through a bunch of the albums. And it's like, man, they produced so much music and they were so influential. And I don't know what exactly it is. But it felt at times like they, when it comes to like the great Canadian bands, we all acknowledge it when we bring it up, but it doesn't get brought up, I think, enough. So yeah, Our Lady Peace bassist Duncan Coutts next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and Ailish, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
You're listening to the Fan Morning Show. with JD and Ailish. Yesterday, JD got a chance to chat with massive Toronto sports fan and bassist for Our Lady Peace, iconic Canadian band on tour right now. If you're Toronto-based, you can actually check them out this Friday at Massey Hall. Tickets are selling quick, but go to ourladypeace.com/tour for a chance to see them live. Duncan Coutts, this is our interview from yesterday with JD.
Very, very, very excited to be joined by our next guest. Apparently, massive baseball guy, like coaches baseball, does it entirely. The bassist for the band, which was my very first CD, which was actually ended up being controversial in the home because of a religious aunt who got a hold of the lyrics. It's Duncan Coutts of Our Lady Peace, who's here on Friday, Massey Hall. Cannot wait to be there. What's up, buddy? How are we doing?
JD, I'm great. Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, this is fun. Yeah, so I obviously, like many people my age, Clumsy was my first CD. I'm kind of dating myself with like CDs, but still, I had the CD, obviously crushed it. It's an all-timer, right? It's just like an iconic Canadian album, especially all-time, any kind of album, alternative, whatever you want to do. And I have this one religious aunt, and I remember playing music like you do as a kid for your cousins, right? I'm an older cousin, and I played it for him, and he ratted me out because of the swear on Oscar. And like it became, I'm not even kidding. It's so tame now too, because it's funny. The next CD that became a problem in my house was Eminem, right? It was like, it was a pretty big step up in terms of like the things. But yeah, looking back on it, it's like that aunt was not pleased, and to the point where she sent me this, and this isn't just like a shot at Christian rock. I'm sure there's some good Christian rock out there, but like she sent me for a birthday, like she's like, I know you like rock and roll. Have you thought about this band? And she sent me like this Christian rock album. I wish I still had it. I wish I could remember the band, but thank you for that. Awesome. Because of you, I'm aware that Christian rock exists.
Oh, you're welcome. And thank you for having us mentioned in the same sentence as Eminem. I feel ultimately cooler today.
Yeah.
man, yeah, no, man, we even got almost banned from going to the States because the border agent thought that we were taking the Virgin Mother's name in vain by naming our band Our Lady of Peace.
Wow. That's a good one. You got to love people who want to insert themselves in that way where they're like, you know what? I think what I've learned with my time on Earth is that I know what's best, and I would like to impose that on to others.
that's it, man.
Yeah. That's quite the person. Like, that's really quite the person. They're like, when I get up to heaven, God's going to be like, remember that band that you didn't let into the United States? And the guy's like, obviously I do. Where's my seat next to you, Father?
Where am I waiting?
Yeah, like, just to the right? Like, yeah, cool. Man, it's crazy, though, because I was looking back on this, right? And obviously, like, I'm pulling your guys' stuff up, and, you know, you guys are doing this tour, which is, like, a really awesome tour. Like, I was going over it with my producer, Lance, beforehand, of just, like, some of the bands that you're playing with on this run, some of the venues that you're playing throughout Canada. And, again, if you're in Toronto this Friday, June 24th, the Wonderful Future Tour at Massey Hall, I'll definitely be there. But you guys formed in 92. That's 30 years of music together. And I don't know how, one, you don't want to just, you know, kill each other. But two, is that it's just like, how do you keep it fresh? Like, how do you want to kind of keep coming back and still doing this and feel like, hey, you're getting a lot out of this? And where you're not just kind of predicting each other's beats, because I'm sure there's like some comfort to that. But also just sort of the challenges of trying to keep a relationship based in music feel new when you're 30 years deep.
Right. You know, if I make speak in a whole bunch of cliches, because the problem with cliches is, you know, they're pretty true sometimes, is that, you know, it comes back to the music, and it comes back to challenging each other and growing. And you know, we've all, God, as you said, 30 years, right? So we've all gone and grown and done different things. If you told me 30 years ago I'd be a baseball coach, I would have laughed at you because I didn't know how to throw a baseball. But you go and you take all of these life experiences and you listen to different music, you listen to different people's opinions, and hopefully when you come back together, you just bring different ideas to the table. And the one thing that has been a blessing in disguise for us is Rain has a very unique voice. Rainer Singer, that is, for people who don't know. And it's allowed us to walk out on a lot of different musical ledges, which has afforded us this ability to go change things up on an album-to-album basis. From a business perspective, probably not the best thing, because, you know, when you have a recipe for a popular drink like Coke did back in the 80s when they changed Coca-Cola to New Coke, it didn't work out so well. But we've always been of the opinion that you have to grow and you have to change. You have to challenge each other. You have to challenge your audience. Because, you know, it's that old Shawshank line, get busy living or get busy dying.
Yeah. Well, hey, man, I mean, from a business standpoint, it can't be all that bad, because I went and tried to look at tickets for the Massey Hall show, and all the VIP stuff is sold out, but there's like it's very limited. So if you're listening to this, here's my recommendation, and you want to go see the band, is that you act on this now, because, yeah, I think that there were a handful left, essentially. So I almost was like, why are they promoting this here? Like, why are you guys are like, yeah, we're playing shows. That's the way that you promote it. And then people are like, oh, we'll go to that. And you've been doing that for 30 years. So that seems
pretty good. We're a little old school, man. We're a little old school, you know, it was just an excuse to talk to you because I listen to you guys every morning.
Well, I was going to say, we can talk sports now, too. Like, you can just admit it. Like, you wanted an outlet. Who, like, does anyone – because I know Rain is, like, a basketball fan. But I'm guessing that you go – everyone has these people in their lives where it's – I love sports because it's just – it's something you can have a conversation with just about anyone, right? Like, I've said this before, but I think I got into it because it was something I could connect with my grandfather on and my dad on, where they would listen to me like I was an adult. I wasn't going to talk to them about politics or music or anything because they're like, no. But sports, they would go, how'd you do in a game? Or you want to have an opinion on this Leafs player? You could actually do that at a young age. But I'm sure that, like all of us, your circle of friends, they become the most predictable people in terms of the takes they're going to have on sports. And you go like, oh, my God, I don't want to hear it. So it's okay.
Well, right. But you're right about the generational thing. And my kid, you know, I see it through my kid's eyes. You know, for me as a young guy, having the opportunity to play sport was an interesting way to interact with and collect new friends and have these different experiences I wouldn't have been able to have. Some of my friends are very predictable in their outlook and beliefs in sports. And some of my new friends aren't interested in sports at all. Like our new drummer, Jason, he's not a sports guy. He's just a music guy. So it's hilarious. I'll tell him about, you know, what happened with the Jays or the Leafs, and he'll say, you know, is that basketball if I say the Leafs, right? Because he knows it pulls my chain. But it's just a great outlet.
What I always like is, one, with non-sports people, this happens always in my life, is that they're not sports people, but if you offer them good tickets to an event, they're like, oh, I'll go to that. You go, okay, but you didn't like it. Why do you want to come? So they're always down with absorbing a free ticket, especially if it's good seats. And two is that there's a weird defense mechanism I have as a sports guy whenever people say they're not into sports, is that it almost makes them sound cool, and all of a sudden, for whatever reason, you feel like the nerd. They're like, yeah, I just don't really like sports. And then you have to be like, unless you're in a group. Like, if it's just one-on-one. If it's a group, then they feel left out. But one-on-one, you feel like the idiot for investing so much in, you know, millionaires who play sports in pajamas, and you go, yeah, I got this. You'd want to see my fantasy football team?
No, man, don't worry about that. I'm old enough to, you know, I'm old enough to not give a, you know what, about that. So I used to feel like that. I've gotten past that. I'm over that now.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let's talk a little bit about baseball, because you just said it. You didn't know how to throw a pitch, and now you start coaching it. And I guess that, it's a way to bond with your kids. But, this is kind of what the cool thing is, right, is that it usually starts in a foundation of some play, and then it extends into watching these games. But the part of this, so I do want to hear about, you know, you and coaching, but also, do your kids actually watch baseball? Because this is the thing, is whenever I watch baseball games, like the other day where there's like a four-hour game, I'm like, if I had a cell phone and I was growing up, there's just absolutely no way that I'd be able to lock into this for 4 hours.
Yeah, it's funny. It's a challenging game with attention spans declining, right? I have a 15-year-old who plays, you know, AAA elite baseball here in town for Leaside. And he is, he'll still watch games. He doesn't watch them as sort of passionately as he used to. He plays a ton of video baseball and then plays baseball every day. So he's obsessed with the sport. But you're right, you know, on TV 4 hours, it's a challenge. I mean, he loves to go to games, and when he goes to games, he's completely engaged. But it may just be because he's, you know, he's so integrated into the game itself.
Yeah.
But
no,
it's not it's not a quick game, but it's funny because I had to learn it to help coach it back in the day. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I've now since been, and this is, I don't know, this is a notch in my belt, but I've actually been fired from a volunteer position, JD.
No,
I don't know whether I'm proud of it or really upset about it. Well, you know, you can't take a coaching position and have people paying real money to have their coaches be there and then go on tour for half the year, right? It's just not a good look.
Except for it totally is, because this is just like having a person on your beer league team that played some type of semi-pro and they're not there all the time, but you just take it when they are, because the rest of the time they get to say, hey, we have Duncan from Our Lady Peace here.
Yeah.
And then people,
because
that's the tough one for you, is I would have thought that you want to be fired because you end up getting basically, you know how people at the dog park all have the same conversation? You're like, yeah, okay, I got this. The beats of this down, like age, yeah, what you feel like, it's all, you got that beat. You would have that with all the dads who want to ask you about the band and who want to ask you about albums and who want to go over like their musical taste with you, and you go, yeah, I don't care. I hang out with musicians all day. This is not really all that interesting to me. Yeah.
Yeah, I really want to work on my circle change. Can you leave me alone here?
Yeah, that's it. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like you ended up wanting to kind of have it out. So, yeah, okay, let's your Blue Jays take this season is, because I kind of feel like it's been crazy high expectations where everyone thought that they were going to be better than the Yankees. And now they're good, but I don't know if they're great. Do you have your same level of confidence, like start to season, as you do right now?
I would like to say yes. I would like to say yes, but I'm really not sure. I think I've been listening to you guys. I've been listening to a lot of people, and I think, I don't know, I think they're at least an arm away or two in the bullpen, and I think that there's some growing to do, right?
I think that that's probably the thing that we underestimate the most in sports is how, like, these leaps are not linear, that when a team takes a step and they're young, that there's usually a lot more growing to be done. And I feel like that with them at the plate. I think that with the arms, they've just kind of blown the bullpen again, and that they really just need to kind of add externally, which always costs you too much and which makes you feel kind of bad. But the one thing I will say that I really like about the team is that they've got this incredible amount of support from the city right now. And I think that that actually matters. Like, you saw that last year when everybody came home and just the way that they play at home. They've got Manoah, who I think is like, if Vlad Jr. didn't exist, I think that he would be maybe the like face of this franchise, even more than like Bo Bichette, where like he's astounding. And they're young and they're still winning ball games. Like, it becomes a problem though if they miss the playoffs a second year in a row with this group, and then all of a sudden people are going to be, I don't think that they'll get the benefit of, well, the division was tough or this was tough. I think that all of a sudden it becomes urgent, and that's what you get. Like, that's where we're at with the Leafs, which you can share your Leafs take if you want to.
But 100%.
It becomes desperate, and then all of a sudden there's like that weird angst. And that's what you hope to avoid with this group this year. Like, I want to see them get in and see what they can do in a postseason.
Yeah, and what? Because I haven't been following it as closely as I normally do because we've been on tour. But
yeah, of course.
I think there are a bunch of contracts that are going to need to be signed quickly with that core, right? And how much money are they going to have to do that? How much money are they willing to put towards that? Therefore, how much are they going to break it up? But I think they're a playoff team this year. I really do. I don't know if they can get past the Yankees, but you never know once you're in the playoffs. But you're right. There's some urgency to it, right? Because, and if I can sort of equate it to music, I used to have this thing called Fearing the Clam, and there's this old Buddy Rich tape that he's going after his band for making clams, right, which are mistakes. Okay. And for many years, I feared the clam on stage. And if I made a clam, more clams would happen. Mm. And it looked to me like sometimes, and I'm no pro baseball player or pro baseball scout, but it just feels like sometimes those guys need to take that extra deep breath and just relax a little bit. And don't worry, because mistakes happen. Just get over it and hit the next one, right? Another cliche, but kind of true.
But it works. And I would say this, that it's so funny because I'm in my job and I work for Rogers. So whenever I talk about like the payroll, you sound like a shill if it's anything optimistic, even though I've been on record hammering them in the past. But the one good thing is that they've been spending a ton of money these last couple of seasons. And it feels like ownership actually does have some understanding. Like, I don't think that this core is going anywhere. Like, it would shock me if they weren't willing to meet the prices of these guys. And so I do think that the shelf life is a little longer. I think fan bases get impatient and then it can be fickle. And I think what you really want to do is capitalize again on this moment where we're coming back and people want to be in crowds. People want to go to events. And there's just real love for this Blue Jays team. Are you feeling that right now, by the way, when you're putting on these shows? Like, since we've been kind of opening things up here, I've only been to one show. And it's funny, actually, because I went and saw Pup, and they had to watch, like, NBA – or, sorry, no, they were watching the Leafs, and they're, like, in the back in their green room, and they're trying to watch the Leafs game, and then they have to go out on stage. And I always think about that with musicians, where it's like – like you said, you're on tour. You have these competing interests. You don't get to watch all these games, even if you do love them. But it just – it felt like it was cathartic. It was this crazy experience. Even I've seen some stand-up shows since I've been back. And it feels like the laughs are in the room are even deeper. Going to these ball games, you see more people. Like, what's it like as a performer right now? Yeah, seeing people come back to these shows after not being able to do it for so long. I know that that's probably the question you get all the time, but I am curious.
Yeah, but it's a valid question, right? Because we all went through that two-year period of just being locked down and being... I mean, we're social beings, right? And we were forced to be apart. And we did some shows at the end of last summer into the fall, and they were good. Don't get me wrong. It was nice to be back, but there were masks in the audience. There were people spaced out. There were less people. The greatest thing to me as a musician in a live setting is when it becomes less about a band presenting music to a group of people in an audience, and it becomes about a room full of people making music together, right? And that means everybody giving of themselves in the moment, singing, exchanging. And we finally have seen this on this, albeit so far short run. And it's been incredible, because that to me is the greatest drug in the world.
Yeah, I'm really excited again. I think that there's something too additive to when you go see a show that their audience is going to be invested. Obviously, like, your guys' audience are invested in you guys. You guys have so many classic songs that it's like, you said, I expect the crowd to be singing along with a lot of these. It's funny, you're like, Rain has a unique voice. It's like, I'm very kind of curious to hear right now some of the people up close trying to mimic that. You know, everybody does their kind of Rain voice. Like, everybody has their for a second, but I just like trying to hang with it for an entire show is going to be really interesting. And again, I'm really looking forward to it. I got actually a bad Toronto confession, which is that I've lived here for more than a decade now, and you guys were my first CD, like the first one I ever got. It was the very first
one. Thank you, by the way.
Yep, you're welcome. You owe all your success to me.
To JD Bunker.
That's right. A kid in the Yukon who was like showing it to his cousin and getting in trouble. But this will be my first Massey Hall show, which I'm very excited for.
No,
I've never been to Massey Hall. Yeah, I know. It's a bad Toronto guy thing. I don't know why. I blame the pandemic, where I go like, I would have gone. You weren't pandemicked for 10 years, buddy. But it's okay. I'll use it as an excuse. I fit my narratives. That's basically this show. But yeah, I'm very, very excited, man. I think that this is going to be a really great place. Apparently the renovations are awesome. And I mean, what a show to see is, again, Our Lady Peace, June 24th. Cannot wait. We'll see you down there, man.
JD, thanks so much for this, man.
Hey, no, absolutely, dude. I absolutely cannot wait for this. Again, 30 freaking years of music, man. Like, so many unbelievable songs, so many great tracks. Like, I just, again, going through it today with my producer, like, going over some of the stuff and just, yeah, how many of your guys' songs, I think, have just been, like, massive, massive, massive for people. And, again, to still be making music, it's one hell of an accomplishment. So, you know, you don't have to worry about your baseball coaching career. It's like, you can get fired. You can get fired.
Yeah, I know. I can. I actually threw with him last night, or no, 3 nights ago. And he threw a slurve that moved about 4 feet, and my eyes aren't as good as they were once were. And I just thought, probably not a good idea to do that when I'm on tour.
Yeah, probably not. No, probably not. Duncan Coutts, again, of Our Lady Peace. For more information, you go to the website. You want to jump on the wonderful future tour. Again, if you're all around Ontario, it's going to Quebec. It's going to be in Timmins. It's going to be in Bala. It's all over the place. Again, go check it out. OurLadyPeace.com/tour. Duncan Coutts, thanks so much for the time, buddy.
Thank you, JD. Look forward to seeing you, man.
That was JD with Duncan Coutts from Our Lady Peace. And from one Canadian legend to the next, we got Dan Shulman after the break. It's Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.